On today's Locked On Thunder podcast, I'm joined by Richard Stamen at Mavs Draft on Twitter to dive into the NBA draft smoke screens, what you should believe, what you shouldn't believe, recapping the NBA combine, and continuing to discuss the Thunder strategy with picks 2, 12, 30, and pick 34.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Let's get it going on the Locked On Thunder Podcast, on the Locked On Podcast Network, your teams every day. I'm your host, media member, and ThunderousIntentions.com editor-in-chief, Rylan Styles. You can follow me on Twitter at Rylan underscore Styles. You can follow the show on Twitter at LO ThunderPod. Email the show, LO ThunderPod at gmail.com. On today's show, we're joined by Richard Stamen at Mavs Draft on Twitter, host of Locked On NBA Big Board, to dive into this NBA draft. Thank you for making us your first listen over here at Locked On Thunder. Make your second listen NBA Draft Big Board. Richard, how are you doing today as we continue to prep for the draft a month away?
Yeah, it's getting more and more stressful. I think we're seeing more and more smoke screens every year it seems to happen. I think we actually almost had a break from it the last 2 years, because last year everybody knew Cade was going number one. There's really no debate about that. We had kind of stuff with Mobley Green, but outside of that, where does it much smoke screens? And then 2020, there was no smoke to be made because, you know, you couldn't go outside to light a fire or anything. So it's a lot different this year. It's definitely nice to be back, but also kind of sucks to be back with that because there's a lot of unnecessary drama. But I'm excited regardless.
It will be exciting to see how this all unfolds. Some of the unnecessary drama is hitting the Thunder. I want to talk about the biggest portion of it, and then we can get down to some of the little smoke screens that we've seen. The biggest one is from Henry Abbott, who mentioned that the Thunder could trade down to 4 from 2 in this draft. And then that was kind of heightened also by Yahoo putting out a report that the Thunder do like Jaden Ivey in this draft class. So what's the value of the second overall pick in this draft? And what would a trade even look like to move down from 2? Do you think that kind of has any sort of substance?
Yeah, I mean, I still want a top 3 pick in this draft. I really do think that the way teams look at it is that it's a 3-man race. I don't think Jaden Ivey's truly in that number one mix like he was once perceived to be. So I think you want a top 3 pick. Like, number 2 is fine. I don't know if really trading from 2 or to 3 is going to happen. I think the most likely candidate really would be someone, you look at Detroit, who, I mean, I've been on Locked On Pistons and been very open about it. I know for a fact, like, this is sourced information, that they wanted Chet Holmgren. If Chet Holmgren is there too, and Oklahoma City, who has come out and said, you know, without saying it, they're probably going to tank next year for Wembanyama, they'd probably rather take the chance at Wembanyama than Chet Holmgren, who's got risk factors. Wembanyama really just doesn't. And I could see them trying to get a huge monster package for number 5 to 2, which they can in turn use next year with whatever they get, and moving back up if they miss out on Wembanyama on draft night.
So are the Pistons the team that you've heard the most, that are at least the most public about loving Chet Holmgren?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of teams loved him, but I know for a fact that they thought he was a dream fit for Cade Cunningham. So just like putting 2 and 2 together, I really do think they're bummed about landing at number 5. It's a really rough spot.
Yeah. And then, I mean, maybe they can do something to get pick 7. The Pistons can, by trading, Jeremy Grant or something, trading forward Jeremy Grant to Portland to get 7. And I don't think that Jeremy Grant's worth the 7th pick straight up. So, what sweeteners would they have to throw in there to get the 7th pick along with Jeremy Grant? And then, how many sweeteners they have left to then trade 7-5 to the Thunder for 2 would be a whole mess. But, if they're really desperate to get Chet Holmgren, maybe they can find something and work something out. I remember another team that fell to 5 in the lottery that was desperate to get their guy, and then they went and got him on draft night, and that is the Dallas Mavericks, who we all thought were going to get Mo Bamba entering the night, and then all of a sudden, boom, they went and got Luka Doncic from the Atlanta Hawks. So it can happen, but you don't really think that there's a ton of smoke right now around trading down to four with the Kings and just kind of flip-flopping one pick?
Yeah, I just don't know really what Oklahoma City gets out of that. I don't understand why they would do it unless they're one of the teams that's solely in on Shaedon Sharpe. I mean, they think, hey, get an asset while taking the risk. But to me, it doesn't really make sense.
So that fit about Cade Cunningham and Chet Holmgren is interesting. How do you think that you would view the differences there between fitting Chet Holmgren with Cade Cunningham versus fitting Chet Holmgren with SGA and Josh Giddey?
Yeah, it's a lot different. Cade being the main ball handler, he needs a center on both ends, really. So I think that's why it's such an important fit, is just because it's such a dire need. The Pistons have one lob threat, and it's Marvin Bagley. And let's just be real. You don't want your best lob threat to be Marvin Bagley. With all due respect, he just hasn't lived up to his draft standards, and he's a 20-minute-a-game guy. If you got a lob threat that can play 30 minutes, you look at the impact that can have for him. But going to Oklahoma City, kind of transitioning the value there, Josh Giddey is an elite passer already, and SGA is a very, very crafty playmaker, especially when he gets driving because he's so unguardable on drives. So when you have that option to dump off or lob to aerial threats, that just makes both of them that much more dangerous.
You know, and another thing about Chet Holmgren, who, you know, there's draft express buzz from ESPN that Chet Holmgren loves the potential marriage with OKC, and that the Thunder like Chet Holmgren and take Chet Holmgren at two. If that is the pick, what are the ways you can use Chet Holmgren OKC whenever you do have two ball handlers already in Josh Giddey and SGA? You have Josh Giddey, who needs to, you know, set others up, doesn't necessarily have that scoring first impact that SGA does. And then you have SGA, who is an ISO scorer that can get to the rim at a high clip and kind of does his damage at the cup. So how do you fit Josh, how you fit Chet Holmgren into that combination with Josh Giddey and SGA? And can you even run some offense through him, you know, through the high post or anything to kind of get those two guys going without necessarily disrupting them at the rim?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's ever a bad thing when you can have a front court player handle the ball and run some offense real quick. And I think that's pretty much the first and foremost thing, is you don't need your – I mean, I'm a Mavs – you know, I watch the Mavs, and, like, they only have guards. They're the only people that can create on the team. Like, literally nobody else on that team can create unless it's, like, the guy is flying by at a full speed, and then they can open the offense. You need front court players. If you're trying to get towards that title competing level, you need front court players that can also create. And when you have a center that can do that, it's just a walking mismatch, because then it creates so many other opportunities. Say, like, disregard the stats element. Say there's no assists, no points out of it. Chet Holmgren, ISOing, getting his man out of position and being able to recognize, hey, SGA's open, Giddey's open, one of them, they can then make an easy play at the highest level. So I think it just opens up everybody's game by having a front court creator like Chet Holmgren. And, you know, his creation isn't elite or anything, but it is an ability.
That is going to be very fascinating to see how it all works out. I think that we see the Josh Giddey Instagram posts on Chet Holmgren's post, you know, the eyeballs and every other emoji he's commented on Chet Holmgren's post. It kind of feels a little bit like last year, whenever you had Kevin Porter Jr. and the Rockets commenting on everything that Jalen Green was doing while the Rockets were trying to keep it coy on who they were going to take. It was a non-mystery if you follow the social media tea leaves. Of course, we'll see if that's actually true with the Thunder in this year's draft. But you said before we started recording that you think that the Magic are going to take Chet. And so if the Magic take Chet, does that make moving down a more realistic option? Because to me, I think that the Thunder should still stay at two, because I think that Jabari Smith Jr. is a perfect fit for OKC and a perfect fit for Josh Giddey and SGA. If you're just talking about who can complement those guys in this draft, I think that there's no better fit than Jabari Smith Jr. To complement both those guys in this draft class. But would there be an option to trade down, especially if, like you're saying, that, you know, you want to be in the mix for Victor Wembanyama next year? I think that Jabari Smith adds a lot of wins to his rookie. You know, as a rookie, he adds a lot of impact plays that can lead to wins and can knock you out of that contention.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, but also the other way I would look at it is Jabari Smith fits with quite literally any other player in the league. Like, there's no overlap, because there's one player. I mean, in my mind, correct me if I'm wrong, there's one player in the league that's not named Kevin Durant that plays defense at a really high level and shoots the ball at an incredibly high level at 6'10 or taller. So he fits with everybody. The only other player is Maxi Kleba. And, like, Maxi is quite literally, he only shoots and plays defense. Jabari has potential to do other things. and he's younger. He's more athletic, just able to use his body a little bit better, more consistent, I think, on both ends. And to me, when you have someone like that, you are drafting your elite role player. This draft does not have superstar power. And when you're in a draft like that, you probably want to try and find that elite role player. I probably said it, so I can say it. You've twisted my words in the past enough. Anyways, you'll do it once. You've done it once, you'll do it again. If you can find like a Klay Thompson type, like, why would you not? Like, the way I look at it is there a single team, even the sharpest shooting team, that Klay Thompson does not start on? And the answer is no. Even though, like, you know, he's kind of washed right now relative to what he was, he's still an elite fit on almost every single team. So when you have that archetype, you can still tank. Yes, he does take away wins, but also he fits with whoever you draft going forward.
So Jabari Smith Jr. is Klay Thompson. That is confirmed. And the last time we did this, as you referenced, you made a offhanded comment about Evan Mobley being Kevin Durant. And then all of a sudden that summer league came and everyone was on board with Kevin Durant being Evan Mobley and Evan Mobley being Kevin Durant. And we didn't get any credit for it because you always backed down if I brought it back up. So this time we're getting the credit. He officially called Jabari Smith Jr. Klay Thompson. That is on the record, just like it is on the record. We're the first ones to ever compare Evan Mobley to Kevin Durant, as we did over a year ago on this same podcast. You can go back and find that podcast as well. But Richard, thank you for giving us another headline there in a player comp. Player comps are all the rage.
You know, it's funny because for those who don't know, you should go back and listen because my side makes a lot of sense. I said Evan Mobley is not a true big man. He's a big man in the way that he is a big man, but he does not play like a big man. He's a big man who plays forward. And that's what I said. I was like, you know, Kevin Durant's a big man. He's like 7 foot, but you would not call him a big. And that's what I said about Mobley. I was wrong, though, because he actually is more of a big than I gave him credit for. But ultimately, like the perimeter skills. But with Jabari, the reason I say Klay, I mean, when you have 6 foot 10 guy who, if you tone down that shooting just a little bit, because like Klay's a historic shooter, you still have an incredible player.
Richard, we got our new package of Built Bar recently, and it was the birthday cake flavor, the puff bars, though, and they taste like birthday cake icing. Have you gotten a chance to try out that new flavor?
Dude, it was the first. I got it at my front door, and I was very confused, and I saw the Built logo because I was just completely unexpected. Stuff is good. It's my pre-workout meal.
Dude, it's perfect for pre-workout, post-workout, as a meal replacement or a snack. Amazing breakfast option as well to keep you held over all the way through dinner time. It's that filling. It's that good for you and good in general. Folks, Built Bars are awesome because that Built Bar that we think tastes like birthday cake icing and it just tastes so wonderful, it only has 140 calories and 15 grams of protein and 4 grams of sugar. It is exactly what you're going to want. It is perfect. Again, pre-workout, post-workout, meal replacement. They have so many other flavors. It's creeping up there for me, Richard, of my number one flavor, but I still cannot turn my back on cookies and cream. Have you changed it yet?
No, the cookies and cream are like the Evan Mobley of Built Bars. Am I right?
I love cookies and cream, but I also love the new birthday cake puffs. So check it out today, built.com, promo code LOCK15, 15% off your next order. Built.com, promo code LOCK15, 15% off of your next order. We are back on the Locked On Thunder podcast, on the Locked On Podcast Network, your teams every day. I'm your host, Ryland Styles. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryland_Styles. Thank you for making Locked On Thunder your first listen every single morning. Every single day, we're here for you talking Thunder basketball. For your second listen, check out the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, and you can hear about that from our guest, Richard Stamen at Mavs Draft on Twitter. Richard, what do we have on tap the next couple of weeks on NBA Draft Big Board?
Man, we have a ton coming up. We have just a ton of general content about what we like and don't like in the upcoming draft in terms of fit. We're doing a lot of team focus, player focus, and just also providing some player evaluation in the middle of it. So we've got a ton coming up. You don't want to miss it. It's been a lot of fun. Honestly, been the most fun podcast I've been recording since I've been doing this.
And so you mentioned before the break that there's no star power in this draft and that's kind of cooled off. And I go back to a couple weeks ago whenever the big feeling around the draft community was, you know, the player with the most star power was Paolo Banchero, but could he ever reach that star potential? Do you still think that that's true, or are you just off on none of these guys are going to be true stars? It's just who's going to be the best option of these three? Who's going to be like that number two guy or three guy?
Yeah, I think you're looking at a bunch of fringe number one guys on a team, not like a true one. I think the entire last year's like pre-draft, of course, really the top five, I thought was an entire number one option. It was just ridiculous amount of talent loaded into one class. This year, it's a little bit different. You get some hyper role players. You get some guys who are specialized at an elite skill kind of thing more than being an elite all-around player. Chet Holmgren's got the best chance at it just because we haven't ever seen – I mean, just a simple background of how rare his ability is. No – the big list of bigs – I did the search for this. The list of big men, 7 foot or taller, to average 2 assists and 2 blocks a game, which he did both at Gonzaga last year, and there's no reason to think Drew Timmy took a ton of his touches. Andrew Nembhard took a ton of his touches. Two of the best passers at their position. He had to coexist with them, and he also was the main rim protector. No reason to think those won't translate. The list of big men to do that is ridiculously small, and it's all Hall of Famers for the most part. I think the worst one on there is like Vlade Divac. So when you're in that list and that's the worst player, your chances at stardom are pretty high. He's probably the best chance, but ultimately this is a draft where you're looking at role players that function at a high level. And it's not, I don't want to say like role player, you're not looking at like a Herb, class full of Herb Jones at the top, which is a good player, but you're getting chances at young talent that can grow from role players to, you know, being the best role players in the league, if that makes sense.
Right. And so we have a lot to dive into. And so we got the top three down, and I wanted to bring up number 12 and 30 real quick in this second segment before we talk about the combine in segment three. My positioning on pick 12 has just been, look, we're going to have to just see how the draft board plays out. And I'm not in some big hurry to find the trade up candidates, to find the ways to get up in this draft, because we did your great community mock draft, which is always fun to participate in. And you get representatives of every team in the NBA that have knowledge about the NBA draft and what their team would look for and what their team would kind of do in the draft. And in these mock drafts that we're doing, a lot of talented players always fall to 12. Our last one that we did on MavsDraft.com, at 12, I got Benedict Mathurin. Jabari Smith and Benedict Mathurin, without moving up at all and losing any additional assets, is a heck of a draft, you know, haul. How do you view the idea of trading up from 12?
Yeah, I mean, I think like you said, there's going to be somebody that falls. Like for my board, I have, I think, 3 or 4 guys that I don't even have in my top 15 that I project to go in the lottery. I mean, not to completely just crap on myself here, but Mark Williams, Jeremy Sohan, and Dyson Daniels. I mean, Dyson's moving up, but I think those three will be gone by where they're drafted at. And Dyson Daniels is 14th on my board, and I think he's well gone by 14. I think he's gone in the top 10. So that moves somebody. Like, if all three of those guys are gone by 12, which is very possible, you're looking at some incredible value. And my board isn't too far off from the consensus. I think staying at 12, you really don't need to move up unless you're in love with one of those guys that's the big risers. I would say really Sohan or Dyson Daniels, which with this roster, do they need those guys? Like, I don't think it's worth moving back for, or moving up, I mean.
Right. I just don't really see a pathway to moving up in the sense of just doing it for the sake of doing it. Now, if Sam Presti absolutely loves somebody, the Thunder do have the assets to go up and get it to ensure that they get their guy. But if Sam Presti and the rest of the NBA views it the way that we think that they do, and what we've heard other teams view it as, and what we view it as of how razor thin the separation is between these guys, there's not really a point to give additional assets to go up and get it. Now, how do you view the draft in the sense of the Thunder have, you know, 4 draft picks, and they could bring in 4 players? Like, their roster is not so, you know, chocked full of talent that they couldn't make 4 roster spots. But how do you view the value of drafting 4 players at 2, 12, 30, and 34? Do you think that that's an option that the Thunder should do?
No, I think they, I'm just not a fan of teams taking 4 picks. Consolidate them, move. What was the third one? I know 30 is the Sun.
30 and 34.
Yeah. I mean, I just, why have all those picks? I mean, 30 and 34 could probably get you if I was the Mavs, I'd be in that in a heartbeat. I mean, just consolidate those two. 26 is better than 30 and 34. Yeah, you get some contract stuff. Look, Dallas probably needs two picks a lot more than Oklahoma City does. One quality player is better than two meh players.
And then if you're Dallas, you in that case, you do move back, but you do get two players, like you said, and you get a priority second-round player that doesn't have to be on a first-round rookie-scale contract. You can kind of maneuver those contracts around however you like if you're Dallas to kind of fit better with your salary cap. And the Mavericks are known to give out some nice second-round contracts. I mean, they gave Isaiah Roby the most expensive second-round contract ever at the time that he signed it. So that's one option. Now, before we get into the combine after the break, I want to talk right now about Caleb Houston. What's happening here? There's a John Hollinger report that the Thunder have promised him at pick 30. And I feel like if anybody pulls out of the combine ever, the Thunder is just the automatic team that's promised him. Like it happened with Matisse Thybulle. It happens with everything. And sometimes they're right. Josh Huestis, that was right. But it's happened with Matisse Thybulle. It's happened with a lot of other players where for whatever reason, either they got picked before the Thunder or just didn't come to fruition, that they had these promises out there that just didn't happen. You know, if it's true, how would you grade a Caleb Houston pick at 30?
Yeah, not well. It would not go over well for me. You look at a guy who kind of shoots as good size. He has good enough form, but didn't really shoot well at Michigan in a role I thought was pretty good for him. And the only other offensive, really overall value I feel like he brings is pick and roll passing. I posted a scouting report of his, and yeah, it's cool that like he was old Vince Carter is what it was like to me. Dallas Vince Carter, who is a good player, but he has to be great at shooting to be able to have that translate because he does nothing else on the court. He doesn't play defense. Like his hips are incredibly stiff, probably a negative in that regard. Can't really shoot off the dribble, doesn't create. I wouldn't take him at 30. I would think that's a huge reach personally.
Yeah, it just doesn't make a ton of sense. I mean, I know he put out of the combine stuff, and that oftentimes means he has a promise, and I know the Thunder are just always a team that gets thrown into the whole promise rank. But, I mean, I have Caleb Houston 41 on my board, and I just don't see it. I just don't understand why you'd make that promise. And, again, when you have pick 34, which he's probably not going to be gone by pick 34, why wouldn't you promise him pick 34, which is kind of a first-round pick, and you then get the flexibility of – signing him to a different form of contract, a different form of payment that fits better with what you want to do with your salary cap. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Maybe it's real, maybe it's not. Of course, John Hollinger knows what he's talking about, but it catches the ear funny, and it doesn't pass the say it out loud test that I always like to go through. Whenever you lay out everything that we know about the situation, does it still make sense? And to me, that's a no, but maybe Sam Presti can surprise us. And I feel like, Richard, that's kind of why the Thunder get put into these smoke screens, because if you're an agent or somebody that wants to leak information to get information out there about a player, about a prospect, it's so easy to stretch the truth about the Thunder because you can just fall back on, oh, Sam Presti's a wild man. He might trade back from two because he just loves picks. Oh, he might take this guy because his board's never consensus and he just loves, you know, trying these project prospects. And we've seen him take big swings before. I think that's kind of why the Thunder get thrown into a lot of these rumors.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same reason the Kings are always thrown in on, hey, who can we screw over in these fake trades? You know, it's always the Kings. Like, it's Kings and Magic. Those are the two teams that are like, oh, well, they've done it before. They'll do it again. And it's like, okay, but that's not evidence. So I'd be shocked. Like, yeah, he does go against the grain whenever he wants. But also, he's logical about it. Like, he's smart when he goes against the grain. Just with all due respect, Caleb Houston is not the smart way to go against the grain. I mean, that's just not. To me, you can get better value. I think you can get better shooters at the spot, and you can get guys that are built similarly with similar pick-and-roll production. I just, if I was going for that, I'd take Hugo Bisson 10 times out of 10 over Caleb Houston, for example.
We'll see what the Thunder end up doing, but I want to thank our partners over at BetOnline, the continued number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds and news, sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball fights, and even next season's NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information from live betting, playoffs, esports, and more. Go right now to their website or even check your mobile device and learn more about the trends and actions this year at BetOnline where the game starts. And folks, it's this easy. You type in BetOnline at the top. You go down to sports. and then you load up their sports book and you'll hit basketball, NBA. The Mavericks, 7-point underdogs on the road on Thursday. Richard, are they going to extend this series or is it going to be over?
You're really going to make me eat my words for when I'm wrong. They're definitely done. It was nice not to get swept. That's just how I see it.
I'm hoping that they can make a run, but it's going to be tough to win on the road for Luka and the Mavs. But check it out. If you think that the Mavericks can pull it off, check out BetOnline and type in the Mavs series and get yourself some action on that game. We are back on the Locked On Thunder podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your teams every day. I am your host, Ryland Styles. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryland_Styles. Follow the show on Twitter at LOThunderPod. Thank you for being Locked On Thunder, your first listen. Every single morning, every single day, we're here for you talking Thunder basketball. For your second listen, check out Locked On NBA. From the first jump ball of the play-in tournament to the last possession of the NBA Finals, Locked On experts take you deeper in the playoffs than ever before. So check out today Locked On NBA, and we're joined by Richard Stamen at Mavs Draft on Twitter, MavsDraft.com, and host of Locked On NBA Big Board. Richard, the combine has come and gone, and we've seen some bad things, like the Patrick Baldwin vertical that compares to Dakari Johnson, and some good things, which it appears that, like you said, Dyson Daniels is just rising up. Who do you think was the biggest winner of the combine?
Yeah, I think it's actually Jalen Williams from Santa Clara. There's two Jalen Williams, so I had to think for a second. They spell him differently, but Jalen Williams from Santa Clara, he really showed out. He had been a guy who people had pegged as a riser before the combine. Had a really productive season in the West Coast Conference. Really put an end to the whole, like, oh, Chet's playing against Milkman, whatever. Like, the conference is really good, and Jalen Williams was a part of the reason why they didn't make the tournament, but got to showcase his game. Measured really well, super athletic, measured at 6'6 with a 7'2 wingspan, which is just ridiculous considering he's 6'4 and a half without shoes. So that's almost a plus 10 wingspan, almost a 9 foot, barely missed a 9 foot standing reach. Like, the versatility for him is very strong now. And to me, I think he's the clear winner. And he also, I don't remember if he played, but I mean, just the athletic testing and the wingspan and all that really did a lot for him.
Who do you think lost the most to their draft stock at the combine?
Patrick Baldwin. Not even a question. When you look at a guy who he needed after a horrible last 12 months, he was bad at the FIBAs for the most part outside of like two games. He didn't shoot the ball well. He was 32% from three. Didn't shoot the ball well at Milwaukee. You look at that, and you needed to shoot well in your drills. Didn't shoot that well. Didn't perform athletically at all. Measured well. Had a good long wingspan. That was the only positive for him, so I worry about him.
Is there anyone who you think that their decision got a lot easier either to stay or to go back to school via the combine? Like, is Patrick Baldwin Jr. just going to stay even though he had bad results? Or is there anyone who kind of still on that fence for you?
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be some surprises. I think Baldwin almost has to stay because can it get worse? I honestly don't know, and I don't know if it can get better. So I think he stays in. A couple guys kind of stood out that just didn't make as much noise as I anticipated. Jabari Walker from Colorado, thought he might make a little bit bigger of a splash. John Butler, not sure what to make of him. He's an interesting 1'7" big man with a 7'2" wingspan. There's some interesting names in here, but I really don't know who goes back. I think the biggest one for me would be Max Christie or something, but I think he's staying in. I'm pretty sure I'd read something that he's staying in, but don't quote me on that.
And then the last time we recorded, we both had recorded this combine scrimmages and then hadn't watched them quite yet. But it seems like the winner from the scrimmages was Christian Braun, who conveniently enough, you and I have talked about him off the air. But has he done anything to change your perception on him, Christian Braun, via these scrimmages? I'm happy for him. He did in the scrimmages, but like, how much does that really impact anything?
Yeah, just some little intel I've received on him about his combine. Yes, he played well in the scrimmages, but in the pro day and stuff with his agency, he did not do well at all. Like, he wasn't shooting the ball. I have a lot of worries about him. I don't think he can drive. I don't think he can dribble straight line drive left. I don't think it's possible for him. He doesn't pull up in a traditional sense. The only way he can pull up is if he has a ton of open room and gets his man to fly by, which is like, he can't, I don't know. He can't just pull up, stop on a dime and shoot over to a defender. That freaks me out. And also the low release, excuse me, the low dip getting into the release. It's a long shot. It's a blockable shot. I'm still scared on Brown. I hope he's gone by the time Dallas picks.
Richard, you're so kind to join us every single week. And I think that this will be a fun way to end from now on leading into the draft, to kind of get an idea of the ebbs and flows of the draft process. But as of right now, your biggest draft day surprise is what?
I mean, I think Dyson Daniels might be top six pick, but at that point, it's not really a surprise. It's become mainstream. So I would say somebody's going to fall to the second round that we don't see it coming at all. In my opinion, I have a bold one, and it might sound really stupid, so I'll just say it anyways. I'm going to take your test, see how stupid this sounds when it comes out, but Tari Eason. I've just heard bad things about his workout process. Like, not like the regimen he's going through, but just he had two workouts I've heard of where he was terrible, and that alarms me. Those are mid-first-round teams that I know will pass on him, and I wonder how far that slide is going to go because he's really talented, All-American, or I think was an All-American really close at the least, but I'm pretty sure he's a third-team All-American. But the teams have a lot of basketball IQ worries about him, so I think he might slide.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the middle of the first round on my board, so if he's having bad returns on his private workouts, then yeah, it's not a great sign for staying in that first round, especially whenever there's going to be some guys who just blow it away who are in the fringe of the second round, and they kind of leap up a little bit for their team. Who do you think that you've heard, if you've heard anybody about the private workouts that have just done the best to improve in these things that we just can't see?
Yeah, the name I've heard thrown around, Keon Ellis. That dude is rising. You look at a guy who he only played 2 years at D1. He transferred up from, I believe, a Florida D2 school or something, community college, something like that. Went to Alabama, super skinny, but does everything that you ask of him. He's a hard worker. He's very good at what he does. And he's a 3-and-D wing. Like I said, really skinny, needs to add weight to really hit that defensive upside. But every workout I've heard anything about from him, he's been one of the best players. I mean, I've had players from the workouts telling me this. I've had agents telling me this. And I've had, you know, the trainers and stuff relaying this information to me. Just anybody that you could think of that hasn't in with him has told me only good things. And to me, that's really positive. I think he's a guy who, if Oklahoma City keeps their 230s picks, it wouldn't surprise me if he's picked as early. I mean, I think he might go as high as Dallas. I think at this point, you look at how the league should have learned from Desmond Bain. Maybe just four spots. Or maybe the Thunder even get him at the Desmond Bain spot at 30. I think he's a very realistic target in the 26 to 34 range now.
And Keon Ellis has worked out with the Thunder. He was one of the first crop of guys that the Thunder worked out for a private workout. And then this week, right, we're going to start seeing bigger names start to go to these teams and have these interviews and workouts, right?
Yeah, this is about the time. Now that the combine is pretty much in the past, everything is done. We have a full week to recover. You're going to start seeing a lot of these bigger name prospects appear in private workouts. You know, that's every year you hear top five team has brought in X player for a private one-on-one workout or one-on-zero workout, whatever it is, interview, all that stuff. So this is when the big names start making a splash. And that's when really you see the top of the lottery start being a little bit more pieced together in terms of what we actually know.
Well, by the time we talk, I'm sure there's going to be five more rumors that come out that we have to either debunk or believe in. So that'll be fun. But Richard, thanks for your time. Anything that you want to leave off with or plug or anything, have at it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that I've impressed you enough. If this is your first time hearing me, Locked On NBA Big Board is just, it's nonstop hit after hit, in my opinion. We have some great minds on there between me. I'm actually at the least of the minds, in my opinion, like, but Leaf Tulin is a really good mind. Sam Ferris from Draft Dummies and Rafael Barbo. I can't say enough good things. He's the full-time host. That man is just gifted. He's, in my opinion, the best draft person in the world. And we are lucky to have him. I'm so lucky to work with him. He always brings out the best in us. And we have a lot of fun on the podcast, more importantly. So go ahead and listen to us there. And we're on every single day.
Go check him out. Locked On NBA Big Board. They're going to have mock drafts, player rankings, everything else. We're going to have our mock drafts for Locked On Thunder as well, and big boards and everything. We got plenty of stuff on the Locked On Podcast Network for you to check out. revolving around the draft. This week's prediction, Chet Holmgren number one?
Yep. Still okay. Sticking with it.
We'll see if that changes next week. But Richard, thanks for joining us. And until tomorrow, be good. Be good to one another.